we have a special guest, Carol Levine, who I guess we spoke maybe 2 months ago. I actually became aware of Carol through her husband, Marty, who started to come to Celebrate Recovery, and is friends with Sonia, right? I think that's the connection. So anyway, that's how we kind of connected, and Carol had reached out to me. She's very passionate and very proactive in the area of childhood abuse awareness and prevention, and she asked for the opportunity to bring her story to us, to bring her information to us. So I'm grateful Pastor Randy allowed us to open it up to the entire church and all our Celebrate Recovery participants. So I would like to thank you, Carol, for coming out, for taking this night out of your busy schedule. I know you're all over the place. Like last night, you said you were up in Hackettstown at Centenary College. Mm-hmm. So she's a real advocate who's taken the bad things in her life and is taking them and using them for good, to be a voice, to increase hope in others who have gone through abuses as children or even young adults, to let them know that there is hope and that healing is available. And I'll just let her come up now and share her story, as well as she's going to intertwine that with educational information about how we can become more aware, things that we can be looking for, ways that we can encourage others to look for those red flags, mm-hmm. that there's a problem, yeah. and how to be a voice. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, I'd like to invite you up, Carol.
Thank you.
I don't usually use a speaker because I have a big mouth.
Can everybody hear her okay? Sure.
I have a lot of humor, and sometimes it's kind of weird, so, you know. But anyway, many times I've been asked to tell my story, and I wrote a book called Panic Child, A Howard and True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect. I did that some years ago. And it actually tells my whole story. It's on Amazon. Thank God, so far, I've gotten all 5 stars, which is, wow, that's a biggie for me. I was the type of kid that used to run from school, and I wrote a book, and they get 5 stars. Oh, my God. So, I'm blown away. But anyway, I would like to tell you about my story, and then I'm going to teach you ways to spot child abuse, what to do if you see it, how parents need to speak more to their children about sex, and also about the perverts out there, without shame. Because kids, you know, they have little antennas, and if they see that you're ashamed of, like, their body parts, God gave us the head, He gave us shoulders, He gave us the woman, the breasts, a vagina, and call it what it is, because that's what it is. You see, if you show shame, the kids are going to be afraid to come to you, because that's a, you know, that type of thing. It makes mommy or daddy feel uncomfortable if someone does approach them. It is my thought that one of the best ways to get rid of pedophiles, if you will, and they always go after children who are prepubescent, okay, they're not quite teenagers yet, that's what they like. Male and female, okay, boys and girls, there's no preference, okay. Most of the times, we do know that 1 out of 4 girls will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. 1 out of 4. 1 out of 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time that they are 18. Now, boys don't like to speak about things like that, and far less than girls, because they're supposed to be macho and tough and all this other. So they keep the secret, as we call it at NASCA. I am a representative of the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Easier said, NASCA. And that's naasca.org. That's our website. Now, we work all the time with people on Wednesdays and Fridays, especially. People come on and tell their stories, just like I'm about to do with myself. And we have, oh my God, we've done so many shows, well over 1,000 shows. And it's something you might want to listen to on a Wednesday or Friday night if you're not busy. It starts at 8 o'clock and ends at 9:30. We are not just nationwide, we are worldwide. We have people calling in from India, from China, from all over the world. And sometimes they become a part of NASCA many times. We have people working for NASCA that are from the UK. Okay? So we are worldwide. And guess what? We're free. People can make donations if they want. If they don't want to, we're there. We're there 6 nights a week. We only take Saturdays off. That's it. So we're very busy and many times very tired. But we are here. We're here for anyone who needs help. We have a contact page. If people have a crisis in the middle of the night, say they've been sexually abused or having terrible nightmares, they don't know what to do, maybe they're suicidal, whatever the case might be. We have a contact page, and on that page, my name is there, there's other people's names there, about 25, I believe, at this point, that you can contact, okay, if you need help in the middle of the night, or even the daytime. All right, now I'm going to start with my story. I came from a very wealthy family. And usually people think that, you know, kids from child abuse, they come from, you know, poor families and so forth. It doesn't matter whether you come from money or if you're poor or what the condition might be. If the situation is there for you to be kidnapped, say, I was kidnapped too, that will happen whether you're rich, poor, or in between. If there is a middle class anymore, I'm not sure. But, you know, the point is, if you're available and a pedophile is out there, they will grab you, okay? Now, in this family, this very crazy family that I grew up in, there was a lot of people that were drug addicts, they were alcoholics, they did rub elbows with a lot of movie stars and so forth, because they had shows, flower shows, we were florists. And they grew flowers, and we would actually send our flowers to the New York market. I was born in New York. Most of my family was born in New York. And they got to know the movie stars, and like Jeannie Crane. Now, don't forget, this is a long time ago, but she was one. Do you know Jeannie Crane? Very pretty redheaded lady. And Esther Williams, okay, she was a swimmer. There were so many people that they got to know, and I was only this tall, so I don't really remember their names, but I have a lot of pictures. I have my grandfather, who was the head of the family, with the flowers. Now, he never touched me. He was never mean to me, even though he was a nasty alcoholic. My bio father, they used to fight constantly. And I would see terrible, terrible domestic violence. Knives flying, glass being broken. My father also beat my mother horribly. She was a little lady. She was like, she weighed 95 pounds. She couldn't eat. A lot of times when you're nervous, you either overeat or you undereat. That's what happens. And she couldn't eat. So many times I would sneak down at nighttime, because that's the kind of kid I was, and to see what was going on. I couldn't sleep anyway. There was so much noise. And my brother, 5 years my senior, who became one of my monsters later on, would hide under the covers because he was afraid of my father, and he had been hit by my father. So I would sneak down the steps, and I would watch this horrible thing that was going on. And one night, I do believe that I did save my mother's life, because he always said he was going to kill her. And my brother had to tell me what killing meant. I didn't know quite what that was. And so then I got really scared. And I went down for that last night before they separated. And he had picked up a skillet. It was a very heavy, the black skillet. And he was going to hit her over the head with that. Now, let me tell you something. You get hit by that, you're probably going to be dead, okay? That was one of the pots and pans I didn't play with, okay? Because it was too heavy. So I screamed, "No, Daddy, no!" like that. And I didn't want to see my mother die. So he turned around, and he came after me. And, you know, it's either freeze or fright, you know. You run, or you freeze, or whatever, or flight. And I just froze there like this, like a statue. I couldn't move. But my heart was pounding so hard and so fast, I thought it was going to jump out of my chest. I didn't know if he was going to hit me or what. So he grabbed a hold of me and shoved me very hard against the stairwell, which I had come down every night from. And it felt like every bone in my back was breaking. I remember that. It hurt so badly. And he didn't say a word to me, but he all of a sudden let go of me, and I fell to the floor. My mother was in the kitchen, and she was over in the corner, still huddled, and she couldn't move. She was so frightened. So I got myself up, and I went into the kitchen, and she said to me, "My brave little girl," she said, "what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you over to the telephone," and in those days, the phone was like, you pick it up, and you dial zero, blah, blah, blah. that tells you how old I am. But anyway, she said, you know, when the operator comes on, say, "Police, police." All right? So I knew where I lived. I knew my address. I knew all that stuff. So I knew what to say. But I never had to use that because they did separate pretty soon thereafter. Now, my mother wanted to work to get her divorce. I ended up living a nightmare life for a year and a half with a pedophile uncle. Seemed like no one knew he was a pedophile. And his wife, who was a very cold lady who terribly underfed me. I was very frightened, needless to say, and I begged my mother not to leave me there. I had seen that part of the family maybe once or twice. That was on the other side of the family. I didn't want to be there. I knew it. I knew I didn't like that man. I didn't want to call him my uncle. I knew I didn't like him. I knew there was something wrong with him. The couple times that I did see him, he would just smirk at me, and I felt like kicking him. I mean, I knew he was a wise guy or something. And this is where I end up. Okay? So I wasn't a happy camper. It wasn't long before he started to come into my bedroom about 5 o'clock in the morning. My aunt would be downstairs making breakfast for him, being the good little wifey, and lunch to be taken. He worked in the city too. And he would come into the bedroom, and I remember the first time he came in, I certainly didn't want him in there. I knew that much. But he immediately started to touch me inappropriately. And he had his hands all over my little six-year-old body. I was six by that time. And he couldn't take his hands over me. And it turned into a thing when I couldn't sleep anymore because I knew at 5 o'clock in the morning, this nut was gonna come into the room. And I turned, I watched that doorknob, and when the doorknob started to turn, I knew I was in trouble. He's coming in today. I have decided, after much thought, and I was keeping track, that over a year and a half, he molested me 176 times. Yeah. And I didn't dare go to my aunt. She was a very cold lady. All I was money to her, because my mother paid her well to take care of me. So, this man was so ruthless, he would say to me that if I tell on him, he will kill me. Now you see, children, this is why two-thirds of children don't tell. Two-thirds. When I tell you that there are 850,000 kids who are sexually abused a year, approximately, remember, two-thirds don't tell. This is like from the CDC, the FBI, the Justice Department, missing and exploited children. When you look on the wall, when you go into Walmart and you see those pictures of kids missing, They were kidnapped. A lot of them are into trafficking. It's disgusting. I will talk about trafficking another time in a way that people will understand and want to come to learn. The point is, we don't know exactly how many. We do know of the cases that are reported. So that's what we can report on. So I say at this point, approximately 850,000 kids a year. Now the CDC spends $124 billion just for those kids every year. This repeats. And who do you think has to pay for it too? And I'll tell you why as my story goes on. When I got out of that crazy house, because I finally told, I told an aunt of mine that came who was a nice aunt. I liked her. She was funny. She was drunk, but she was funny. And I knew she liked me. So we had this bonding. I didn't bond with my mother. Never. And my father had taken way off to California, and who wanted to see him anyway? So, you know, I had this problem. I had no family. If I needed to call my mother, I didn't know where to call. I had no telephone number. I had nothing. I didn't know where she lived, nothing. So the only one that I had was this aunt, who was a real core. She was really hysterical. But she knew there was something wrong with me. And I was going to school looking really scuzzy. I was dirty. My hair was greasy. I was unkempt. I was much, much too thin. My hair started to fall out. And I'm thinking to myself, why doesn't someone see that I'm being hurt? You know, kids don't think to say abused and stuff, but I knew in my head that I was being hurt. Why doesn't someone see this, the adults? So the school never said a word. They didn't want to be bothered. They didn't want to, maybe they just weren't educated enough, I don't know. But when I told my aunt, after a year and a half of taking all this abuse, I used to go down at nighttime because I was so hungry. They had a beautiful German Shepherd, and they had the dog biscuits. Well, guess who was eating dog biscuits? Yeah, the doggy and I. So I would go down and I'd take the dog biscuit, and they never ever counted the bottles of Coca-Cola. And that was real Coca-Cola in those days. But anyway, so, okay. I would have a bottle of Coke and I would have a dog bone. And then I would creep back up the steps because I certainly didn't want to get caught doing this. My stomach was gurgling and all this other stuff with this garbage going in, but at least it felt fuller. Couldn't sleep. I was too hungry, I was scared, and now I had that problem too, you know. But I did go to sleep. Now, when I got out of that crazy place, my mother did take me to another aunt and uncles who were much nicer. And she said to me, why didn't you tell me this was going on? Well, let me tell you something. If you don't even know where your mother lives, you don't have a phone number on her, and she's very cold to you. She never told me she loved me, ever, not once. She didn't give me hugs or anything. You were talking about hugs before. I love them, you know. But you know, what little kid doesn't want their mother to hug them? And if the child goes towards the mother to be hugged by the mother, and the mother pushes you away, you're not going to talk to her about anything. This is like another stranger. So, all right, she put me with an aunt and uncle, and they had kids of their own, and the house was very, very small. Much too small even for them. They didn't. The last thing they needed was me too. And I remember that my clothing was in a box in the hallway, never taken out or anything. I didn't know how long I was going to stay there for, but at least I was being fed, okay? So I was getting food, I had a roof over my head, and no one was touching me, okay? I didn't have to worry about being sexually abused there. So I was there approximately 6 months. I hadn't changed schools. And because we also like lived more or less in the same areas. And I remember coming out of the school one day, and there was the maniacal, maniac uncle that had been abusing me sexually. He had me doing things to him. He tried to enter me. He couldn't, because I was 6 years old. Come on. So it was all molestation. Is that lesser of the crime of two evils? No. One is just as bad as the other. One is just as scary as the other. Trust me. So I look and I see my uncle, that man, and he starts to chase me with his vehicle. Now remember, he said, if you tell, I will kill you. So he was out to kill me with his car. And in those days, the cars were very heavy. It was like a 53 Oldsmobile or something like that. Pontiac, I think it was a Pontiac. Brand new, made good money in the city. Big, heavy car chasing me down the street. So I wasn't thinking. I was only about, what, 7 and a half by that time, something like that, a little older. And I'm going up and down streets, side streets. But every time I came out, there he was. You know, he just kept going straight. I was going up and down, up and down. I got caught in barbed wire. My legs were full of blood, and my dress was all torn from the barbed wire. All kinds of bad things were happening. So I got down finally to Main Street, and I said, hey, dummy, the pharmacy, go back to Main Street and go into the pharmacy. Certainly someone will help you there. So I went into the pharmacy. And I made like I was looking at comic books, which I didn't read. But I had to do something. So anyway, I looked out the window, kept peeking, and finally he did take off. Do you think that one adult there seeing blood dripping down my legs, dress all torn, dirty, do you think any of those adults approached me? No. Now one person said, in fact, I got some dirty looks. Like, ew, what a dirty little girl. Not, hey, maybe this kid's in trouble. Huh? So, all right, I made it back home to the house, and my eldest cousin, oh God, she's like 8 years older than me, and I had to sleep in the same room with her. But anyway, she saw me, and she said, what's going on with you? And my family did call that bad uncle and say, now what they should have done was call the cops. But they said, if you do this again, come to the school and terrorize Carol, or we are going to call the cops on you. Now let me tell you about pedophiles. When you lose one victim, you keep going on. You go from one to another, to another, to another, to another. It's as simple as that. That's what pedophiles do. Remember, pedophiles go where children go. I don't care where that place is. Wherever there's children, there's going to be pedophiles. That's the way it is. So, what happened here is, I just lost my train of thought. I heard that. Okay. What happened was, he left me alone, but he found another little girl that was 2 blocks away from where I had stayed. Right? At my uncle's house. 2 blocks away. And he was, you know, doing the same thing to her that he was doing to me. Well, her father caught him. And he beat him so badly that he almost died. Now you see, that's a little bit of justice, maybe. A little bit. But when you bones heal and you heal, what happens? You continue on being the pedophile. That man belonged in jail. He belonged in jail. Now, okay, so my mother remarried. I didn't know she was remarrying. Never met the guy. One day she came and she picked me up, and she picked my brother up, and we ended up living in New York in Staten Island. In Travis, Staten Island is where I went to school, and I lived in Bull's Head. So we had bought a beautiful, they bought a beautiful place, which again was going to be a flower place. This guy had worked for my grandfather, that's how my mother met him, and they ended up together. Well, I thought everything was going to be hunky-dory. I had 2 and a half bedrooms. It had been a mansion. I had 2 and a half bedrooms. I had a sink in my bedroom. I had an elevator. It was a hand elevator, one of these deals. They had horses, these people before us. We had cobblestone outside. It was beautiful. Today, it's a country club in Staten Island. But anyway, we were there for close to a year, and I was waiting for my stupid father, who came back from California. He was going to take us to Coney Island, my brother and I. I loved Coney Island in those days. You don't want to go there today, but back then Coney Island was beautiful. I mean, it was just a place to go and have a lot of fun. So I'm waiting for my father. We had about 14 acres, I think, there. And I went down to the end of the driveway, which I wasn't supposed to do. But I was 8 years old by that time, 8 and a half. And what 8 and a half always does what you're supposed to do. So I'm looking left, I'm looking right for my father, who said he's gonna come, take me to Coney Island and all this other stuff. And all of a sudden this blue car pulls up. And what happened was, I didn't know the man, but he had the window down. It was kind of a nice day. And he had the window down, and he's going like this. What? Can't hear you. And so I got closer and closer and closer, because I was always told that if an adult speaks to you, you speak back. You know, in those days, you're supposed to really, you know, do the right thing, be proper with adults and all that, and do the right thing. So I got so close because I wanted to see what this man needed and wanted, and what could I do for you? And he pulled me in. Okay. And away we went. We went all the way around the island, and that guy pulled down a road where there was a single house, very, very old Victorian house, and it was empty. So he knew where he was going. He had his place picked out. And yes, I was very violently sexually raped. Okay. Very raped. Very violently. Blood all over and punched, kicked. I was a fighter. I've always been a fighter. And so I was fighting back with him, all right, trying to get away from this monster. I don't know what I would have done if I got away from him. I didn't know where I was. But I wanted to get away from him. I knew that. So anyway, he finished. And he took me back to the other end of our driveway. Like I said, we had 14 acres. One side was Victory Boulevard, and the other side was Signs Road. So he picked me up at this end and dropped me off at this end. I couldn't walk. I was in so much pain, okay? I get out of the car, and I'm walking down the driveway. I didn't want the neighbors to see me. I was very embarrassed. See, when kids are sexually abused, and we don't just cover sexual abuse at NASCA, we cover all the abuses, physical, emotional, mental, every abuse. But when you're sexually abused, already you feel dirty, already you feel ugly, already you feel stupid. Anything negative is what you feel. And I didn't want those people to see me in this condition, the neighbors at the other end of the driveway. So I'm crawling, half walking down the driveway. I get down to the house, finally, and I see my father's there. Oh. And he says, "Hey, stupid, where were you?" Cops are there. So my mother was there, and she approached me, and she took me to the side. And believe me, I looked different than when I left, okay? So she said, "What happened to your dress? What happened to you?" And I told her. I told her the truth. And, of course, that went over to the police, and it turned into a zoo. My father, instead of being caring and loving like you'd want and expect for a father to be, he called me all kinds of filthy names. He said that I egged the guy on. What are you, nuts? I'm not even 9 years old, but I egged the guy on. One of the police officers got so mad, he took my father's hand like this, and he took the handcuff and put it right to his own vehicle. Because the window was open. So he was actually right to his own vehicle. He was handcuffed. And he said, "In all the years that I've been a cop, I have never seen any father react like this to that situation, like this." So, yeah, good for the cop. And I was so blessed that he did that. I'm so thankful. I mean, God watched over me. I never blamed God. I'm one of those people that never blamed God for any of the things that happened to me, ever, ever, ever. Because I know that God gives us the choices. We can make our own choices in life. He gave us a brain. So what we do in life many times is from our own choice. Now, this is like this. This isn't choices from little girls and little boys who get sexually abused. These are situations that happen. And you suffer horribly. I ended up with PTSD. I ended up with panic attacks, all kinds of things. You name it, I had it. I couldn't leave the house, agoraphobia. I didn't want to go to school. I felt dirty. I would take showers, and I would rub my skin so hard that at times it would bleed because I felt dirty. That was the biggest thing that I felt was dirty. I knew that it wasn't my fault. But a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of times people will say, why didn't I do this, or why didn't I do that, or maybe I could have done this, or what did that guy see in me that he wanted me, or she, and this is something we never talk about. There are almost as many female pedophiles as there are males. Now people don't ever think about that, do they? And you won't think about it because you're not told. If you go on Huffington Post, you'll see all the female teachers that are being taken to court because they couldn't keep the hands off of the kids, male or female. They wanted little girls or little boys. And some of them are pretty teachers and some of them aren't. It doesn't matter. If you're a pedophile, you look like whatever you are. And that's another thing. Pedophiles look like we do. My daughter could be a pedophile. No, I'm just kidding. I just knew she'd love that. You don't have to have horns coming out of your head, is my point. A pedophile looks like a normal person. A normal person. They don't look any different. So, I'm going to tell you a little bit more of my story, and then get into a little bit of educational, and then have the videos. The man was caught who kidnapped and raped me. I was one of 14 girls that they knew of. First time offender. Now, let me tell you something about first time offenders, and this is something that I am working on, and I want it pushed, and I want laws changed, because our laws are very, very bad. Just because someone's a first-time offender doesn't mean that when they get caught, that's the first time that they offended. Okay? Obviously, there's 14 girls. We know of at least 14. There could be 20. There could be 50. Who knows how many? And they get such a little tiny sentence. Or sometimes, like up in Vermont, which is what made me write my book, I was watching O'Reilly, and there was this guy who had raped a little boy, and he got away with it. You remember that one? He got away with it, and he had probation. That was it. I got so mad that I just fumed, and the Lord told me to write this book. I never wrote a book before. I barely did book reports in school because of my panic. I ran from them. I barely did outlining. Are you kidding me? I'm going to write a book? Well, something told me to sit down and outline and what you wanted in that book. 314 pages, it ended up being. And so what I did was I wrote that book. And when he was in Pennsylvania, O'Reilly, I tried to approach him to give him a book, but he was unapproachable. I couldn't get near him. Okay, I like O'Reilly. I like a lot of the talking heads, as they call them. I do follow a lot of the politics. Now, getting back to this guy who raped, I would have been number 15 of those girls. We had to go to court. Let me tell you something. It triggers everything that you went through, to have to go to court, to have to go and look at mugshots. The cops used to come into my classroom and pull me out to go downtown to look at mugshots in front of my peers. I didn't want to do that. It was embarrassing. I felt like I was the one who did something wrong. That's how kids think. So I picked him out. I wasn't the only one. It took a long time to finally pick this guy out. And the only thing that they did have him on, not for actual sex, it was something else. And I said, this looks like the guy that might be the man who was raping us. Turns out it was the same guy, even though it had nothing to do with sex. It had something else. They were showing all different kinds of mugshots. They kind of thought it was him. So anyway, we go to court, and all he got for ruining the lives of, say, 15 girls, 14 besides me, right, it's 15 girls, was 3 years imprisonment. That's it. So I'm standing there thinking, I'm 8 years old, I'm not quite nine. By the time he gets out, I'll be 11 or 12, somewhere in there. And quite frankly, he knows where I live. So I was scared. I didn't feel like anything good came from this. A little girl was standing next to me, she was so scared of this monster, she peed her pants right there. She wanted to piddle right in the courtroom. When children are abused like that, there are all different kinds of things that happen to them, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically. It affects you in all different ways. So first I had domestic violence, then I had a weird uncle, and then I got kidnapped and raped, and then my brother turned into a nut. By the time I was 9 years old, he thought he should put his hands on me too. Oh yeah. And when I went to my mother to tell her, she just looked at me and she said, this happens in a lot of families. Well, yes it does, but it's not supposed to. All right. So I didn't get any help, and wouldn't have done any good probably if I told her about my uncle after hearing that, all right? So, you know, that's the type of life that I knew. And I got no love in that family. CPS did come to the house in Staten Island. They checked me out. They didn't like my mother, and I could understand that. I didn't like her either. And they looked in my closets and they said, well, you could use a little more of this and a little bit more of that. And as far as clothing was concerned, they had all this money. And still I didn't have what I needed. And she said to me, this lady, I remember, this is a good worker. She took me over and sat me down in my room, in one of the two rooms, and she sat me down and she said, don't ever, ever think that this is your fault, ever. Now that was a good CPS worker. That stayed in my head and in my heart for the rest of my life. But I also knew that I wanted to work in this field. Even though I wasn't highly educated, because I kept running, I had too much panic attacks. I didn't want to go to school. No. I started to take a flask. I took a flask with me. Nah. I started to drink like my dear old dad. The man that I despised the most, walking the earth almost, because of the way he was, I ended up drinking. And that's called self-medicating. Mm-hmm. I was hitting that panic the only way that I knew how. Because if I drank, you know when you're going up and down the classroom, you know when your turn is coming, you know. So I would wait, it's over here, so I'll go to the ladies' room, and I'll go glug, glug, glug real fast, put it in my pocket, and by the time it got to my turn, well, I was just feeling just fine. You know, I didn't have any panic, did I? So I would go up, and I would give them my report, my little essay, whatever, and I must say that I didn't know how to write. And they always ended up out in the hallway. That was good for my self-esteem, which was very low, okay? So when I had my little reports up there, they didn't know that I was maybe a little half and sad. But I wrote good reports and all this stuff, and they ended up in the hallway, and that made me feel good about me. It showed that I wasn't quite as stupid as my mother kept saying that I was. I wasn't dumb, I wasn't funny looking, and all this other stuff that I had to listen to. So, when children are brought up in this sense, yes, they have PTSD many, many times. They never thought to take me to get help. Oh no. So I never got help and I kept my mouth shut. But this is going to be the end of my story. I could go on and on because it's probably 50 chapters more to it. But I'm going to just simply say this. I turned into a tough kid. And I still am a tough person. I think that's that wall that I put up for self-defense. See, many times when you see kids that misbehave and they're tough and all this other stuff, there's a reason for it. It doesn't always mean that they're a bad kid. I was a loving, bubbly child at one point in my life when I was about this high. But then when all this stuff happened, I turned into a rough kid, you bet. I like Harleys, I still like Harleys. You know, I did a lot of bike riding, and you know, I went partying. I saw people die in front of me because they used to shoot up drugs, and we still to this day have people dying right in front of you because they're shooting up drugs. I didn't do that. I was a beer drinker. I thought I was better than that. I always drank beer. But you see, beer can do you in too. And when my fingers started to swell and my kidneys started to pound, I knew that it was time. You better make a choice, little girl, okay? You keep drinking the way you're drinking, and you're going to end up dead too. So I made that choice. I said a prayer. I was always a very spiritual kid. I never had boundaries in my house because no one cared about me. My mother used to tell me to run away. I tried to commit suicide, and she told me to do it right. She was standing right next to me. And so this was my life. This was my life, okay. So what I wanted to do was grow up, get my head together after I stopped drinking. I had to do that first, that wasn't easy. Stop drinking and start reaching out to help kids in crisis. I was a part of the Rahway Lifers program, Scared Straight. I did that for a few years. But the people who really saved me was the church. Now, if it wasn't the Catholic Church in Red Bank, New Jersey, if it wasn't that church, they had counselors there. They had a prayer group of about, oh, I guess it was about 200 people, something like that. And they came from all walks of life, too. So, I had counselors that were helping me. I didn't tell her. I didn't tell my husband. I didn't tell anyone, you know, about this. I just simply, you know, became a part of this group and loved it so much that it was in my heart so bad. And yes, I'm a born again Christian. And with the faith and the power that Jesus Christ has given me, that God has given me, something that I always felt was always there, because again, I never blamed him. I knew to blame people, even as this high, I knew it. I met Billy Graham when I was 5 years old. One of my other aunts took me to New York. I was living very close to New York at that point. And she took me, and I met Billy Graham, and I got saved too. I was only 5 years old. And he gave me a Bible, which I still have today, okay? And I tried to write my name in it. Of course, the C was backwards and an A-R-O-L. But yes, that's my Bible. That was from Billy Graham, and I cherish that. So my mother hated me too, and I'll use the word hate, because I believed in God. I believe in God. He's my, without God, I'd be dead. And again, I'm not going to tell you any more of my story because there's things that maybe might make you run out of here scared. I don't know. But I know that if it wasn't for God, for Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, and I think it's probably our Lord and Savior, if it wasn't for him, I would be dead because I got and went places where I shouldn't have been. But remember, the way that people handle things is by becoming that tough little girl so that no one can hurt you. And I just got involved with so many different things in my life that I really should be dead. And God was with me every step of the way. And that's just the way it is. And I will say that until the day I die. So I got married, finally. My first husband turned out to be like my father. Now, we make these mistakes a lot of times, those of us who come from alcoholic backgrounds. We tend to marry into something that's familiar to us. And we're still looking for daddy's love or mommy's love, whichever one is the alcoholic, whatever. We tend to do that. And I had a horrendous time with him before we got married. I had a blast. He had a Harley. I was in heaven. And he also had, but he will from the, go from one side to the other. He had a Harley, but he also had a Cadillac. Whoa, what more do I want, right? So he used to take me into the city, and we went to all different places to eat, beautiful places, French places. I thought I died and went to heaven. Now that's during the Vietnam era. And let me tell you something, he didn't go to Vietnam. It's strange, he ended up in Korea, I don't know why, I don't know why. But he came back, and he was a nasty SOB, forgive me, boy. He was a nasty person. And he beat me horribly, hit me in the head too many times, I think. He didn't do what he should have done as a father. And I would leave him, and I'd go back to him, I'd leave him, and I'd go back to him, and that's common too. All right? So we got divorced, and I remarried, and you know that it's Marty. Marty has his flaws, but we all have our flaws. But you know what? I'm a lot better off today than I was then. And we didn't have to go to thrift shop anymore. Not that there's anything wrong with thrift shop, don't get me wrong, but my first husband used to give me a quarter and tell me to go and buy a pair of pants. What? Even then, a quarter couldn't really buy me a pair of pants. It might buy me a little blouse or something for the kids or a shirt or something, I don't know. And that's the way it was. But with Marty, he worked in the city, he was an electrician, he did very well in his job, and maybe keep him in your prayers, yeah, because he's very, very ill. He has colon cancer, and I have hospice coming in, and so I don't have to say any more than that. Okay, so that's going to be the end of my story. I was blessed with two beautiful children. I absolutely adore them, and each of them have their own talent, and they're just the light of my life. That's what they are. They're the light of my life. I have wonderful grandchildren, and I also have two great-grandchildren. Ho ho! So this is great. I'm going to be 70 in May, okay? And I'm thinking to myself, God has blessed me so much that not only do I have children, I have grandchildren, and I have great-grandchildren, and I just think that's so cool. I really do. So I have ended up well, went through terrible things in my life, but I use all of the things that I went through as teaching tools. I work with the college students. I've spoken to police officers about child abuse. I'm here tonight. I was a centenary last night. You know, that's just the way it is. So anyway, yeah, that's my story as I'm going to tell you. And I thank you for listening. One thing that we do offer at NASCA is always hope. Now, NASCA is not a terribly, it's a group where we don't speak too much about God and Jesus. A lot of atheists can come on the show. I mean, you never know who's going to call, for one thing. So we have to keep it like toned down. I don't. I have a big mouth. I let people know that the church saved me. You bet. But NASCA is a very good group, and we do have many services to offer, even working with adults if they do need groups. What we do is we send them to groups in their area because we have people calling in from all over the world, right? Where they're asking for help. So I have a calendar, and I also have, that's a great thing to use, and that's for events. And we also have groups from all over the United States and any English-speaking country outside of. So I have lists to look down, so if someone calls in from Bermuda, I look up Bermuda, and I see what groups they have from there that could help them. Whether it be domestic violence, or whether it be child abuse, or whether it be, you know, they're survivors of child abuse, and maybe they're on the verge of suicide, whatever. We send them to people, and if they're really suicidal, you go to the hospital. because we are not going to, you know, take responsibility for that if someone is going to actually commit suicide. So we do help them though. We have many things to offer people, and it's all free. So I can say that about NASCA. It's a good group. I've been a part of NASCA for 7 years. So now I want to talk to the parents a little bit here. A couple of you I recognize. It's good to live here. One thing that parents don't know is that you have to really speak to your children. Well, I don't care if it is high, but if you've been giving a kid a bath and they say, "Mommy, what's this? Mommy, what's that?" Like I said before, you tell them all the names of their body parts, okay? And it's because I remember being in this police department and the cops were asking me, "Well, what did this guy do to you?" Guy who had kidnapped 14, 15 of us. And I didn't know what he had, you know, I didn't know what he was doing exactly. I mean, I knew from my uncle, and this guy was doing about the same thing, but I didn't know the name of my body parts. Don't be ashamed. If you're ashamed of what God has given us, well, then the kids are going to be ashamed too. So always, always educate your children about their bodies. Tell them that there's boundaries. If someone makes you feel uncomfortable, say they're hanging around you too much, you know, an adult. And it can be an older teenager too. Okay, this is some people don't realize this stuff. They do know that there's a good possibility that by the time you're 15 years old, you know you're different. You'd really rather be with the little kids than your own peers. Now they're working on that. Not 100% proven, but this is what they feel right now. Because I called a place in Avalon, New Jersey. I wanted to have them on the show, because we have all kinds of people come on and speak about that. And they clammed up. They didn't want to talk about it. So I wasn't able to get them on the show. But the point is, I did get some information, and that was one of the things that they did tell me, that they work mostly with 15-year-olds to 18-years-old. Okay, they work with them. So that's something to keep in mind. Your older brother, like mine, he was 5 years older than me, could be a pedophile, and he was, okay? It wasn't just me that he touched. He was touching my girlfriends. He was touching anyone that he could touch. He was touching, okay? So that ran in my family with an uncle and my own brother. How disgusting is that? So, yeah, I didn't like it either. Okay. I have so much here, I could spend 5 hours. But I have a letter here written by pedophiles. I think this is pretty cool in a sense. And what this letter does is it explains, okay, and it'll actually teach you, you know, what to look out for. What does a pedophile look like? Well, they look like you and me. But how do they behave? See, that's the thing. That's the thing. What is child sexual abuse? Child molestation usually begins with a sex offender gaining a child's trust and friendship. He grooms them. Grooming means that you befriend the child, you become their friend, rather. And you buy them presents. They're your prey. You see, there's something that's P-R-E-Y, okay? They're the ones that you want to get a hold of and use them sexually. So you'll treat them differently, okay? So you make friends with them, you get close. Maybe you'll buy them things that the parents won't buy. Maybe they can't afford to buy, or maybe they haven't deserved what it is they have in mind, okay? But they'll buy it for them. Okay, so you have to watch that. Okay, if a child appears comfortable or curious about this type of behavior, like getting presents, maybe he'll put his arm around you, you know, like this. Maybe sit too close to you. I'm saying he, but don't forget, it could be she, too. Have to bring that out. They're just too chummy. That's how it starts. You're too chummy. I'm gonna use that word. Research has demonstrated that most of our school-based children or child abuse prevention programs do not prevent child abuse or children from being abused and have little impact on reporting. Well, why is this? They don't teach the parents right. You see, if you don't teach them the behavior of a pedophile, how do they know? How do they know what to look for? It's not society's fault. What is our fault is that we don't teach society what to look for. The red flags, as you were saying before. I have one there on the red flags. Okay, so that's number one. They work very slowly. They have all the time in the world to groom this kid. Maybe the parents are really hardworking people and they'll say, hey, let me take Jimmy out and I'll take him over to, you know, we'll play football together. We'll go to the field. We'll play football. And the parents think, wow, this guy is really nice. He's a new guy in the neighborhood. We had him here for a barbecue. And he's helping us with the kids. This is a cool thing. How nice can this be? So the parents let him go. And maybe this time he's rubbing his leg. Okay, he's going like this. He might even go around in different parts. Maybe he'll start to massage his back, you know, things like that, to see if the kid will take it. Some kids would say, hey, cut it out. Keep your hands to yourself, you know. Other kids might, because they don't get enough physical attention from their parents, in the sense, and it's all right if you want to rub your kid's back. It's all right if you want to massage your kid or massage your... Parents can do that. There's nothing wrong with that, okay? But this guy has plans for your kid. All right, so the next time he sees the parents, he might say, oh, we'll go to the movies. Let me take you to the movies. There's this movie that this kid really wants to see bad. So he takes him to the movies, and while they're in the movies in this dark theater, all of a sudden his hands start rolling a little bit more over the kid's body. Before you know it, to make a long story short, that guy has his hand in the kid's crotch. Okay? Yeah, right, same thing. Disgusts me too. But anyway, the point is this. You know, he's feeling around, and again, is this kid gonna say, hey, what are you doing? Or is he gonna freeze like this? Because maybe he's so shocked. That can happen, all right? So, and not say anything? So then the guy will say to him, now don't tell anyone, but I have a little present for you. And this is our secret, what I'm doing right now. This is our secret. This shows you that I love you. I love you like my own son. Okay. Might say something like that. This is called grooming. Movie's over. You go to the guy's house. He gives him booze. Maybe he gives him a couple of beers. And the kid loosens up. Okay. They're friendly. You start showing him some pornography. That's the next step. The porn comes in. And then when you have that going on, you know that this guy, he's just getting ready. He's getting ready. He wants this kid, you know, to be interested in the pornography and all this other stuff. And by the next time he sees this kid, yeah, it's over at his house usually, he will try to sexually abuse him. Now that's called grooming. Now any adult who would rather spend too much time with a child rather than their own peers, that's a red flag. If someone goes out over at the field over there and plays football with your kid once in a while, that's nothing, of course. But if someone's too much, all right, too much with your kid, that's something. And you have to watch that. Now, when I say pedophiles go where children go, that means that they could be coaches, like Sandusky. We have Matt Sandusky on our show. A lot of times he comes on. He was the adopted kid of Sandusky, one of them. And he goes all around for NASCA and promotes our show and also talks about his story. Matt's a good guy. But he was groomed by his own father and touched by his own father. I think they really were. And I think the mother knew it too. That's my gut feeling. So what happens is it can be coaches, it can be camp counselors, it can be Bob down the street like I was just talking about or whatever I call them. It can be someone in the family. Many times it's in the family. 90% of the time when a child is sexually abused by someone, 90%, it's by someone they know, love, or trust. That could be caregivers, the school people, or God forbid, the church, with the Catholic Church especially. And it's also in the Orthodox, of the Jewish, that's coming out now. The Boy Scouts, big problem with the Boy Scouts. And people didn't know it, they found records. This tall of records in a closet. Didn't have the internet back when that started. But they found records in Manila files of all the kids that had been abused, their names. And sometimes it was payoff, other times the kids didn't tell, but they kept a list of people that they knew who had, that were abusive, the counselors. So it can be any organization that deals with kids. That's my point. And when you do background checks, you think that fingerprints, like I've been fingerprinted four times because of the places I've worked, the detention center, the Raleigh Lifers program, Scared Straight, even Greystone, I worked over there when it was still there, and the methadone clinic in Randolph, I worked there as a counselor. I mean, I've been fingerprinted a lot, but if I had never gotten caught, right, my fingerprints would all be good. Not all pedophiles get caught. I'm not a pedophile, but I'm just saying, fingerprints aren't the real answer. Sometimes they go on for years before they get caught. In the meantime, they work in these places. Who is a typical child molester? I am probably well known and liked by you and your child. I can be a man or a woman, married or single. I can be a child, adolescent, or adult. That's weird. I can be a child, adolescent, or adult. That's what it says. I can be of any race, hold any religious belief, and have any sexual preference. I can be a parent, step-parent, relative, family friend, teacher, clergy, babysitter, or anyone who comes in contact with children. I am likely to be a stable, employed, reputable person of the community. You see? My education and my intelligence don't prevent me from molesting your child. I can be anybody. Parents can defend me, or they can defeat me, rather, if they work together. Now, this is why I'm standing here. Parents can defeat me if they work together. I have another paper here that says that this is a community thing. It's a community issue. I don't care what town we're in, it's a community issue. It, like, for instance, when I don't know if we used to have Crime Watch or something like that. It was run by a police officer. I liked him. His wife is a real estate lady. I can't think of his name right now. But I can't think of his name. But anyway, I was a part of that Crime Watch that we had here in Phillipsburg. This is years ago. It has been proven that neighborhoods that have Crime Watch or neighborhood watch, whichever you want to call it, the crime in that area is much lower because people are watching. This is what we have to do. We have to watch our cars, we have to watch our houses, we have to watch our children. Children are our future. They should be at the top of that list. You see something that doesn't look right, you see a kid walking down the street who's limping, maybe he has on dirty clothes, maybe he's skinny. All right, this kid may not be sexually abused, but he's being physically abused, right? So, that's child abuse. Turn him in. You can do it anonymously now. There's no more excuse. You don't have to say who you are. Okay? At one time, people had to get really involved, and that's what, you know, put a lid on things. That's not the way it is anymore. We even have 1-800 for a child. Now that's the whole state. I call them at 2:00 in the morning. I want to see if they're real. I stay up all night. Some of you know that, you know me. All right. So, yeah, if you go by my window, you see old Carol still working up there. All right. So, okay. I called at 2 a.m. and I did get a counselor. And I had to wait maybe 3 or 4 minutes, and I was getting a little antsy. I was thinking, they just messing with me or what, you know? But no, a lady came to the phone, she got on, and she said to me, I'm sorry, but phone calls are coming in left and right. Now that's good. That means people are reporting. They're reporting. And we need everyone to report. If you can't get somewhere with your own place here, okay? If you're in Hackettstown or Phillipsburg with the, you know, like the bikers as they used to be called, or CPS or whatever, you call that number, 1-800-4-CHILD. 1-800-4-HILD. And believe me, by the time they get done with those people in your area, plenty of them, yeah, it'll take place. They'll take care of the problem. I've had them on the show many times. They're great people. And so remember that number, 1-800-4-CHILD.
Good people to talk to. Okay. If you are a single parent, I may prey on your fears about your child lacking a father figure. Oh, does it be? A lot of times women, they want to go out. Maybe they worked all day. Okay, and the weekend comes and they have two kids and they want to go out and they have a babysitter in mind. Maybe the babysitter's good, okay? So you go out, you have a good time, you meet this guy, you end up thinking he's great, and you get married and he's a stepfather. Well, let me tell you something. A lot of stepfathers are not great guys, okay? A lot of them. I'm not going to say all of them, that's not true. A lot of them are not really after you. They're after your kids. Cute. Oh yeah, it says here. I take advantage of your children's natural curiosity about sex by telling dirty jokes. That's another thing they'll do. If the parents, you know, don't want dirty jokes said in front of your children, see, they treat them differently. They give them booze, think of that. They tell dirty jokes, they show them porn, all right? Okay, that's a pedophile. I'll know more about your kid than you will, that's right. I want to go over this because this is quite long. Okay, this is cool, I want to know this too. Why don't child molesters always get caught? Remember, once I start, I will do everything possible to continue molesting your child. I am sexually turned on by your kid. And I enjoy being sexual with them. If I have had a lot of practice, I can become very skilled at offending. I will not stop on your own. I am very selfish, and I do not want or care if my behavior is hurting your child. And that's where I say they have more than one. And in the meantime, they have your kid really scared. All right, they're not going to tell. A lot of times, 2/3 don't tell. Remember that. Now, this is what you have to do as a parent. Educate and teach your children healthy values about sexuality. What is sex for? Be honest with your kids. About once a month, have a parent-child meeting in your house. Ask them how they're doing, okay? Ask them what's up in their lives. Get really close. Bond more with your children. Speak to them about sex. Sex is a beautiful thing. God gave us sex. This is why we procreate. This is why we have children. But teach them the boundaries. Get them smarter. Teach them what to do if a pedophile approaches them. There's a little 6-year-old girl that was approached by a pedophile, and she was in a yard with a bunch of kids. This isn't that long ago. And she was in the yard, and this van came by, and there was two guys in there. They jumped out of the van, they ran into the kid's yard, and they were going to nab her. They probably wanted to traffic her. She was a pretty little blonde girl, and they probably wanted to put, you know, her into a little sex ring there. That's what they had in their mind. So, what did the kid do? She had been taught by her parents what to do. Instead of just standing there, she started to scream. That's always a good defense, right there. And when the guys came up towards her, she kicked them one guy so hard in the shin that he bent over. And then the other kids, they came on over, and I think they pushed the other guy away, and they took off. You see, pedophiles don't want people, you know, realizing that they're pedophiles, okay? So they will take off. They'll go to another kid. So they took off, and those kids were okay because they had education. Parents told them what to do if you're approached. It's very, very important. Very important. Another story that maybe you've all seen that was on AOL. If you haven't, I'm going to tell you about it. There's a little 10-year-old Spanish boy, and he came from a very, very religious family. And this family had spoken to their children about pedophiles. So what happens?
He's walking down the street. He's alone. Now, that's a bad thing right there. Don't let your children walk alone anymore. You can't do that. It used to be when it's dark out and the street lights come on, you know, get home and eat dinner. It's not like that anymore. We have to worry about our children. Okay? Don't let them walk alone. Don't let them go to the mall alone. If they're over at the mall, you call them on their cell phones and you find out where they are exactly, what they're doing, and when they think that they're going to leave. Say one of them has a driver's license. When are you leaving? Okay. So you have to really keep your hands and start thinking, you know, I've got to keep hands on and think to keep my children safer. So this Spanish family, what a riot this is. The kid, like I said, he was educated about pedophiles and came from a very religious family. And what happened was, he's walking down the street, this truck pulls over. This wasn't a van, this was a truck pickup. And the guy opens up the door and he pulls the kid in. The kid's, now he's in trouble. The guy takes off like a maniac. And the kid's sitting there totally frozen, because usually we do freeze when we get in positions like this. Our minds might even go numb because you're scared. Kids are kids. You don't think. So he's sitting there like this. But this little kid, all of a sudden, he started to think. And he started to sing. Did any of you hear this story? This is so cool. He started to sing. Jesus loves me, yes he does, for the Bible tells me so. He's singing all of these religious songs that he'd been taught in CCD, probably. I think they were Catholic in CCD. And the guy couldn't deal with it. So he pulls over and he says, shut up. And he took off again with the kids up on, right, in the vehicle. The kid continues to sing all different kinds of songs that are religious. The guy pulls over and he says, get out. Yay, good kid, I'm so thankful, okay, thank you, Lord. The kid was doing all of this stuff, all this singing, and it worked for him. And he ran all the way home. Like the little piggies we talk about on our feet, he ran all the way home. So that kid was saved. So you see, if kids know what to do, in that case, he just happened to start singing. I don't know what made him sing, you know, but thank God he did. Because the guy was probably an atheist, or maybe touched a part of his heart where he knew he was doing something wrong. Okay? And that's quite a thing, God. The point is, it worked. It worked. Now, what I was talking about before, be wary of older children or adults who want to spend a lot of time alone with your child. I could go on for hours about this, but I'm not going to because the time is going by. So frequent injuries or unexplained bruises, here we go. I'm gonna speak about emotional abuse, just a little blurb, and physical abuse, a little blurb, neglect, and then sexual abuse. And then we could go to the videos, okay? I have a ton of information here. Anytime you wanna learn more about child abuse, go to the website, that's www.nasca.org. I do have cards, which I'll give all of you. And all you do is type that into your browser, and the website comes up, okay? And you can find out anything, okay? Very good website, I'm very proud of Bill Murray. That's not the movie star. That's, we get a lot of calls on that. They think he is. He's my movie star, who was that? Okay. All right, so here's emotional abuse. Excessively withdrawn, a kid might who's emotionally abused may begin to behave in a different changes and ways. This is what they do. A lot of times it's behavioral, all right? So they become excessively withdrawn, fearful, or anxious about doing something wrong. They show extremes in behavior, extremely compliant or extremely demanding, extremely passive or extremely aggressive. I went from being very aggressive to being very meek until I built that wall up. Okay, then I became very aggressive. I should have put it this way. Okay, I'm up with it. Let's go back down.
Hang on.
I want everything to drop on us again. This is where I have it highlighted here is where I'm going to speak about.
I'm hoping this is.
Maybe I can just take this out. Yes, I can. All right, that'll be better. All right, I'll do it this way. That's good. Sorry about that. I gotta find a page. Oh yeah. We'll get to that. Alright, I can actually go through it. I know it so well, but I really don't
hear it as you silly goose.
Yeah. Okay. Alright, emotional abuse. Again. Excessively withdrawn, fearful, or anxious about doing something wrong. That can be, they can be out somewhere and they'll go like this a lot. Very much like that. Well, maybe I did something wrong. Shows extremes in behavior. That's what I'm talking about. Alright, extremes in behavior. Doesn't seem to be attached to any parent or caregiver. Acts either inappropriately adult taking care of other children or inappropriately walking, going back to thumb sucking. In other words, they go back to when they're a little kid. If the kid's 4 or 5 years old, they might start needing potty training again, or they might start to suck their thumb again, things like that if they're just a little kid. Okay? Okay. Shies away from touch, flinches. Well, why do they flinch? They flinch because they've been beaten. See, again, it's not just sexual abuse. It's sexual, physical, emotional, and neglect. I remember going like this a lot, because I knew I was going to get it. Ooh, my mother's going to hit me. She turned out mean, too. And, all right, so, that can happen. Is always watchful or on alert. That's called hypervigilance. When I go into a diner, or into a restaurant, if I'm lucky, I'll look for an exit sign. Where's the exit sign? Oh, yeah, there it is. Another one? Okay, all right. That's hypervigilant. In case someone tries to get at me. That's something that's it's in my brain from childhood. Yes, you know that. You know what I'm talking about. You can see that. That's all right. I just want to tell you something here, quick. That in a room full of 100 people, there's 25 to 30 at least who've been abused. At least. Okay, now, another little stat for you. They might act inappropriately, adult taking care of children, or inappropriately infantile walking, thumb sucking, or throwing tantrums. Okay. Frequent injuries or unexplained bruises. This is under physical abuse. They'll have welts or cuts. This we can see. Like this little boy here, this little girl, she's got a hand on her mouth because no more secrets. That's what we're fighting for, okay? And this little boy over here, he's got a black eye. That's obvious. You can see it. And that little girl there, she's all crunched up. That's how I used to be in the corner, because I knew that someone was going to get me. So it can be like that. Shies away from touch, flinches at sudden movements. Yeah, that's that hypervigilance. Sometimes I'll think something's like going like this at the side of my head, and it's not. You know, but still in all, I jump. You know, I twitch, whatever. Okay. Wears inappropriate clothing to cover up injuries. All right. They don't want anyone to see their bruises. And the parents make sure that they don't see the bruises, because even if it's 90 degrees out, they may make them wear sort of like winter clothing, or at least long sleeves, say, because they've beaten them and they don't want them, those bruises to show. Okay, clothes, now this is neglect. Clothes are ill-fitting, filthy, or inappropriate for the weather. Hygiene is consistently bad. You're unbathed. Your hair is all matted down and not washed properly. And they smell. You know, they have BO. Untreated illnesses and physical injuries. Frequently unsupervised or left alone or allowed to play in unsafe situations and environments. Frequently late or missing from school. Well, I was all that. Okay, next, I was in that house of horrors. Sexual abuse,
trouble walking or sitting. If a child is not ready to, have sex, you get hurt. Some people can't even have children after being sexually abused. I have a couple friends like that. And it's because everything gets torn and inside, and you bleed so badly. I think I was like this much away from that one. All right. Display of knowledge or interest in sexual acts inappropriate to his or her age, or even seductive behavior. I've seen kids that, they go around, they're doing the grind, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. Things that an adult would do, not a kid. Kids aren't supposed to know sexual words at small ages. And they're not supposed to go grinding around and all this other stuff. That's a house you have to watch. Been problems in that house. Maybe there's problems right now. Okay? Let's see. Make strong efforts to avoid a specific person without an obvious reason that other people can see. Well, maybe that person was one that raped them or molested them. Same thing. The problem is still there. Doesn't want to change clothes in front of others or participate in physical activities. They're ashamed of their bodies. They feel dirty like I did. Okay. STDs, they get STDs. Because people who rape them, that doesn't mean they're clean people. A lot of times they have STDs. They get chlamydia a lot, that's a big one. Or they can get others. Or they can get pregnant, especially under the age of 14. That's why sometimes you hear 13-year-old girls, 12-year-old girls, they may have their period, but that doesn't mean they're a woman. They have a baby. All right, runs away from home. Yeah, I know about that too. I've been on the streets, and I've been there, and I know what it's like. Okay, now, there's two things here more that I'm going to read, and then we'll get to those videos. Indicators of sexual abuse in young children. Sleep disturbances. I'm going to leave you with some of these papers so you can make copies for the congregation. In fact, you can have all of them. Bedwetting and or loss of fecal control. Regressive behavior, like sucking the thumb I was talking about. Self-destructive or risk-taking behavior. Impulsivity or distractibility. You can't concentrate. I couldn't concentrate. This is about what's going to happen when I got home. Refusal to be left alone. Scared. Fear or individual, such as an alleged offender. Well, they have someone to be afraid of, don't they? Fear of people or a specific type of gender. Fire setting. Your little kids. I had an 8-year-old that was a fire setter in detention center. Cruelty to animals. Yeah. You would think that the older kids would be cruel to the animals, but it's the younger kids too. They can be cruel to animals. Problems relating to peers. They don't know what to say. Hey, guess what? My brother Jimmy, he likes to mess me up and touch me. Are they going to talk like that? I don't think so. I thought you talk to your peers. So they'd rather keep quiet. They might seem bashful and inward rather than talk about anything. They don't know what to say. Sudden changes in behavior. Maybe before that happened, they were bubbly like I was. Okay? Difficulties in school. It's not always that they're a bad kid, that they're doing bad things. You better leave your home. And don't tell them when you're coming either. You tell people who work for Diapers, as it was, or CPS, they let you know when they're coming into your home. Don't do that. They have time to coach the kids, make sure the house is nice and clean, and all that other thing. When I worked in detention center, the state never told us when they were coming in. And that was a smart thing to do. That's where I learned that. Inappropriate interest for the age and things sexual. We are sexual beings. Now I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow your mind. Some kids, even though they know that it's wrong that they're being sexually abused, their bodies are working. And they end up liking sex. Hey, that felt good. We're sexual beings. That came from God, not the action of the perpetrator.
God doesn't want people hurting his children. No. But our fingers have a purpose, our feet have a purpose, our whole body has a purpose. Now these are the older ones, and then I'm going to stop. Okay, for the teeny boppers. Eating disturbances, overeating, bulimia, and anorexia. Those kids are sticking their fingers down their throat and throwing up. It's not only because maybe they're worried about their weight, okay? A lot of times they have other problems, okay? And it'll come out this way. Running away. Oh yeah, I ran away. I ran to the streets, it was fun. Some of the time. Substance abuse. I drank a lot of beer. I like beer. But my last drink was in 1981, thank you Lord Jesus. 1981 was the last time, you bet, that I had a beer. Or any type of alcohol. Self-destructive behavior. Suicide attempts, got it here. Self-mutilation, you see kids carving? Incorrigibility. Kids that go around, they're incorrigible. Teeny boppers, they can be very incorrigible. Criminal activity, that's why they ended up in detention center. And I did my own little evaluation. I found out that a lot of them had been sexually abused. A lot of them. Depression and social withdrawal, problems relating to their peers, sudden changes in behavior, anger issues. Oh, I'm a mad person. I used to be so angry. I used to walk around in circles, and I was going to kill this one, and I was going to kill that one, and I was going to do this, and I was going to do that. Until finally I got so dizzy, I fell on the ground. Didn't do any good, did it? What am I going to do? Okay. I ran out and started to run instead, and I became a pretty good athlete. Okay. Difficulties in school. They're going to have that too. So there you go. There's a lot of information for you that I gave you. I hope it was helpful. I'm going to leave a lot of my paperwork here. That one there, big red flags. So that you can, if you want to, you can make copies and give it to people in the church. And then also, too, I have cards that I can hand out to you. And blue ribbons, people. Blue ribbons. As you know, April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, Prevention Awareness Month. So maybe we'll hand these out. Just go around and hand those out. When you look at that blue ribbon, you think about all the children who have been abused, okay? Now I'll leave you with the audience card that has a little bit of information on it. Okay, you can hand them out and keep the rest. And look at NAFTA. You can give us a call. You can listen to shows. You don't have to push the number one. You don't have to push the number one if you don't want to be on the show, okay? If you just want to listen. Or if you push the number one, you can be a part of the show, and it's darn interesting. And remember, on Wednesdays and Fridays, we have people like myself who come on and tell their stories. And that's men and women who have survived. It might be physical abuse, sexual abuse, whatever. And, so keep that in mind if you want to listen to one of the stories. Okay, so what I need now is maybe we'll look at the videos. There are three to see. I had sent five, but my computer wouldn't allow a couple through or something. I don't know what happened. But three is good enough.
I am to be.
Number one, there are two more.
Southeastern New Mexico. In both cases, young children were found living in filth and surrounded by feces. News 13's Emily Younger reports.
Well, dog feces on the floor here.
And that's not the worst of it.
It was obvious that the children had been stepping in and on dog feces.
Alamogordo police say they found dog feces all over the floors of this home Friday. They say it was even on the kids' mattresses. But that's not all they found.
There were knives found in easy access for these two young children that were living in the home.
These photos taken by police show just how easily accessible those deadly weapons were.
And these are obvious hazards that most parents would recognize.
According to police, the six-year-old girl's school nurse notified them after she saw bruising all over the child's face. That's when police went to the home, found the deplorable living conditions, and arrested the girl's mother, 27-year-old Ordelia Boston. They are actively searching for Boston's husband, Jason Volte. This isn't the only child abuse case in southeast New Mexico over the weekend. Hobbs police arrested a woman and her boyfriend after they found their 2-year-old daughter filthy and wandering around a neighborhood.
When police found her, she was very dirty, very unkempt. She had no shoes on, and it appeared that she had been
Cobbs police say they arrested the two-year-old mother, Crystal Adams, and her boyfriend, Charles Brown, Saturday.
There were dumped and cat feces all over the house, all kinds of trash, things that needed to be cleaned up.
All we can do is intercede and hold those accountable for their hurtless children.
Emily Younger, KRQE News 13.
All three children are in CYFD custody. Alamogordo police say this is the fifth incident where CYFD has been called to investigate Ordelia Boston. Good afternoon,
Okay. Well, anyway, I have to admit at times, seeing stuff like this will trigger me a little bit because it never really goes away. You learn how to live with it. You put it in another part of your brain. And, you know, I'm able to stand up here in front of all of you, which is a wonderful thing. I'm not running away anymore. And until the last breath that I take, I will be talking about child abuse in all different forms and trying very hard to educate people. NASCA is a great big organization, like I said now, and we do have wonderful people that come on from all different walks of life that educate us. and if you look at the front of the website when you go there, you'll see every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday off, and then Sunday, we have different programs, different shows, all right? Some I like better than others. But the point is we have people from all different walks of life, like I said, that come on. We've had police officers on. We have social workers on that have degrees in this and that, you know, to teach us and also to teach anyone who's listening. And it's a very good show. I'm proud of it. So anyway, this concludes my presentation with you. I very much thank God that I had this chance to speak to you. And anytime you want me to come back, that's fine with me. I'll be back. If there's someone that's in trouble and needs help, I'm known to do that too. but anyway, I want to thank you. God bless. Keep going, and you know, such a good thing. So whatever we can do, we do.
presentation is needed because it's in the course setting. I'm sure. But, you know, like new videos and things like that, that's a little different, you know. So we're getting there, yeah. And we'll have more. In fact, I think he's working on one right now. Okay, you have one?
If you go to your website, mm-hmm. you have, like, the episodes of your talk show?
Oh, absolutely.
Are they, they're like podcasts? Are there
we have
past episodes so you can click on those?
Yep.
Listen to
them. We have something that's called the archives, and I think there's maybe 5 years there, and they never go away. They never go away. When people call into, and like with me, because I do a lot of presentations, Bill has a whole page for me. You know, you can see a lot of at the college. I was also over in Suffolk County, mm-hmm. their college there. And I go wherever I have to. Wherever God shows me where to go, I go. Okay. And now this has been recorded. I knew it was going to be all right because I don't point to one person and say, you know, it's not a it's telling my story. That's what it's based on, mostly tonight, and giving information. So there's nothing wrong with putting out that. So he'll put that on the page. He's going to be going out and doing presentations, okay? But if you go to the archives,
this is good, though. So anybody who wanted to come here tonight and couldn't make it, I can refer
you
them.
Can just, yeah.
Is that going to be posted on that website?
Yeah. You can go right there and you can get yourself.
That's great.
It's for everybody. It's for everybody.
Okay.
Okay. So I really enjoyed myself tonight, you know, with you people. I think